sleep? Coda demanded. With me, Jared offered, though he didn't seem excited about it. Absolutely not, Coda scoffed. I'm not sleeping on a bunk bed with a child. Coda, I said, stepping away from my sisters and Lucy. You can sleep on the couch or in the garage or in the treehouse for all I care, but if you don't check your attitude, I'll send you back to your apartment right now. Have some gratitude for the security you've been offered. Need I remind you that tomorrow we're burying our father? Either stop the bickering or go home. I turned on my heel and headed down the hall. Without checking, I knew Lucy was right behind me, suitcase in hand. I opened the door to my room, waiting for her to come in with me. Once her skirt swished past the frame, I slammed it shut, heaving a sigh. Was that too much? I asked. It was perfect, she replied with delight. You might as well be the princess already, miss. You're ready for it. Chapter 24. The next day passed in a blur of black dresses and hugs. Lots of people I'd never even seen before came to Dad's funeral. I wondered if I just didn't know all his friends, or if they were here because I was. A local pastor gave the service, but for security reasons, the family was asked not to stand and speak. There was a reception, far more elaborate than anything we could have ever hoped for. Though no one told me so, I was sure Sylvia or some other palace employee had a hand in making this as easy for us and as beautiful as possible. For safety, it was short, but that was fine with me. I wanted to let him go as painlessly as I could. Aspen stayed near me at all times, and I was grateful for his presence. I couldn't have trusted anyone with my life as I could him. I haven't cried since I left the palace, I said. I thought I'd be a wreck. It hits at funny times, he replied. I fell apart for a few days after my father died, before I realized I had to get it together for everyone else's sake. But sometimes when something would happen, and I'd want to tell my dad about it, the whole thing would hit me in the chest again and I'd break down. So, I'm normal? He smiled. You're normal. I don't know a lot of these people. They're all local. We checked identification. It's probably a bit higher of a number because of who you are, but I think your dad made a painting for the Hampshires, and I saw him speaking to Mr. Clippings and Albert Hammers in the market area more than once. It's hard to know everything about people close to you, even the people you love the most. I sensed there was something more in that sentence, something I was supposed to respond to. I just couldn't right now. We need to get used to this, he said. To what? Everything feeling awful? No, he answered, shaking his head. Nothing is the same anymore. Everything that ever made sense is shifting. I laughed humorlessly. It is, isn't it? We've got to stop being afraid of the change. He looked at me, eyes pleading. I couldn't help but wonder what change he meant. I'll confront the change, but not today. I walked away, embracing more strangers, trying to comprehend that I couldn't talk to my dad anymore about how confused I was feeling. After the funeral, we tried to keep the spirits up. There were presents left over from Christmas to open, since no one had been in the mood for a big gift-giving spree. Jared was given special permission to play ball in the house, and Mom spent most of the afternoon next to Kenna, holding Astra. Coda was beyond pleasing, so we let him go off into the studio without bothering to check up on him. It was May I worried about the most. She kept saying her hands wanted to work, but she didn't want to go into the studio and not see Dad there. In an inspired moment, I pulled her and Lucy into my room for some playtime. Lucy was a willing subject as May brushed out her hair, giggling as the makeup brushes tickled her cheeks. You do this to me every day, I complained lightly. May really had a talent for arranging hair, her artist's eyes ready to work with any medium. While May wore one of the maid uniforms, even though it was too big for her, we put dress after dress on Lucy. We settled on a blue one, long and delicate, pinning it in the back so it fit. Shoes, May cried, running to find a matching pair. My feet are too wide, Lucy complained. Nonsense, May insisted, and Lucy obediently sat on the bed, while May tried the most bizarre forms of shoe application on the planet. Lucy's feet really were too big, but with every attempt she laughed herself into a stupor at May's antics, and I was doubled over watching it all. We were so loud it was only a matter of time until someone came to see what was going on. After 3 quick knocks, I heard Aspen's voice through the door.
"Is everything all right in there, miss?"
I ran over and opened the door wide. "Officer Ledger, look at our masterpiece." I gave a wide sweep of my arm toward Lucy, and May pulled her up, her poor bare feet hidden under the dress. Aspen looked at May in her baggy uniform and laughed, and then took in Lucy, looking like a princess.
"An amazing transformation," he said, grinning from ear to ear.
"Okay, I think we should put your hair all the way up now," May insisted.
Lucy rolled her eyes jokingly toward Aspen and me, and let May drag her back to the mirror.
"Was this your idea?"
he asked quietly.
"Yes. May looked so lost, I had to distract her."
"She looks better, and Lucy looks happy too."
"It does as much for me as it does for them. It feels like if we can do things that are silly or even just typical, I'll be okay."
"You will be. It'll take time, but you'll be okay."
I nodded, but then I started thinking about Dad again, and I didn't want to cry now. I took a deep breath and moved on.
"It seems wrong that I'm the lowest caste left in the selection," I whispered back to him. "Look at Lucy. She's as pretty and sweet and smart as half the girls who were in that pool of 35, but this is the best she'll ever have. A few hours in a borrowed dress. It's not right."
Aspen shook his head.
"I've gotten to know all your maids pretty well over the last few months, and she's a really special girl."
Suddenly, a promise I'd made came back to me.
"Speaking of my maids, I need to talk to you about something," I said, dropping my voice.
Aspen stiffened.
"Oh?"
"I know this is awkward, but I need to say it all the same."
He swallowed.
"Okay."
I bashfully looked him in the eye.
"Would you ever consider Anne?"
His expression was strange, as if he was simultaneously relieved and amused.
"Anne?" he whispered incredulously. "Why her?"
"I think she likes you, and she's a really sweet girl," I said, trying to hide the depth of Anne's feelings but build her up at the same time.
He shook his head.
"I know you want me to think about the possibility of other people, but she's not at all the kind of girl I'd want to be with. She's so rigid."
I shrugged. "I thought Maxim was like that until I got to know him. Besides, I think she's had it rough."
"So, Lucy's had it rough, and look at her," he said, nodding his head toward her laughing reflection.
I took a guess. "Did she tell you how she ended up at the palace?" He nodded.
"I've always hated the castes, Mare. You know that. But I'd never heard of them being manipulated that way to acquire slaves."
I sighed, looking over at May and Lucy, this stolen moment of joy in the middle of sorrow.
"Prepare yourself for words you thought you'd never hear," Aspen warned, and I looked up at him, waiting. "I'm actually really glad Maxon met you."
I coughed out something close to a laugh.
I know," he said, rolling his eyes but smiling. "But I don't think he would have ever stopped to wonder about the lower castes if it wasn't for you. I think just you being there has changed things."
We looked at each other for a moment. I remembered our conversation in the treehouse, when he urged me to sign up for the selection, hoping I'd have a chance for something better. I didn't know yet if I'd gotten something better for myself. It was still hard to tell. But the thought of maybe giving something better to everyone else in Ilia, that possibility meant more to me than I could say.
"I'm proud of you, America," Aspen said, looking from me to the girls by the mirror. "Really proud."
He moved into the hallway, back to his rounds.
"Your father would be too."
Chapter 25. The next day was another sentence of house arrest. From time to time I'd hear the floor creak and I'd turn my head, thinking that Dad would walk out of the garage, paint in his hair like always. But knowing that wasn't going to happen didn't feel as bad when I could hear May's voice or smell Astra's baby powder. The house felt full, and that was enough for now, its own kind of comfort. I decided Lucy shouldn't wear her uniform while she was here,
and after a little protesting, I wiggled her into some of my old clothes that were too small for me but too big for May. Since Mom was busy distracting herself by cooking and serving everyone, and I'd decided to tone down my look to sit around the house, Lucy's main job was to play with May and Jared, a task she took on happily. We were all gathered in the living room, busying ourselves in our own ways. I had a book in hand, and Coda was hogging the television, reminding me of Celeste. I smiled, betting she was doing exactly that now. Lucy, May, and Jared were playing a card game on the floor, each one laughing when they won a round. Kenna was propped up against James on the couch, and baby Astor was finishing a bottle in his arms. It was easy to see the exhaustion in his face, but also the absolute pride in his beautiful wife and daughter. It was almost as if nothing had changed. Then I'd see Aspen out of the corner of my eye in his uniform, standing watch over us, and remember that in reality, nothing would ever be the same. I heard Mom sniffling before I saw her coming down the hall. I turned my head and watched her walk toward us, holding a handful of envelopes. "How are you feeling, Mom?" I asked.
"I'm fine. I just can't believe he's gone,"
she swallowed, forcing herself not to cry again. It was strange. There had been so many times when I had doubted Mom's devotion to Dad. I'd never caught the glimpses of affection between them that I'd seen in other couples. Even Aspen, when everything was on the verge of being real, but still very much a secret, showed me he loved me more than Mom did Dad. But I could tell that this was more than the worry of raising May and Jared alone getting to her, or stress over money. Her husband was gone, and nothing would ever make that right.
"Coda, could you turn off the TV for a minute? And Lucy, honey, could you take May and Jared into America's room? I have some things to discuss with the others," she said quietly.
"Of course, ma'am," Lucy replied, and turned to May and Jared. "Let's go, then."
May didn't look happy about being excluded from whatever was going on, but she chose not to put up a fight. I wasn't sure if it was because of Mom's heavy demeanor or her love for Lucy, but either way, I was glad. Once they were gone, Mom turned to the rest of us.
"You know, your father's condition was something that ran in the family. I think he could tell he only had a little time left, because about 3 years ago, he sat down and started writing these letters to you. To all of you."
She looked down to the envelopes in her hands.
"He made me promise that if anything ever happened, I'd give them to you. I have ones for May and Jared, but I'm not sure they're old enough. I haven't read them or anything. They were meant for you, so I thought this would be a nice time to read them."
"This is Kenna's," she said, handing over a letter.
"Coda?"
He sat up straighter and took his. Mom walked over to me.
"And America."
I took my letter, unsure whether I wanted to open it or not. These were my last words from my father, the goodbye I thought I'd lost. I ran my hand over my name on the envelope, thinking of my father dashing the pen across it. He dotted the I and my name was some kind of squiggle. I smiled to myself, trying to guess what made him decide to do that, and not caring at the same time. Maybe he knew I'd need to smile. But then I looked at it closer. That little mark had been added later. The ink on my name had mostly faded, but that scribble was darker, fresher than the rest. I flipped over the envelope. The seal had been broken and taped back together. I glanced over to Kenna and Coda, who were both diving into the words. They seemed engrossed, so they hadn't known that these existed before this moment. That meant either Mom was lying and had read mine, or Dad had opened this again. That was all it took for me to decide I had to know what he'd left for me. I carefully picked at the retaped seal and pulled open the envelope. There was a letter on faded paper, and then a short, quick note on bright white paper. I wanted to read the short note, but I was afraid I wouldn't understand it without reading the long one first. I pulled out the letter and took in Dad's words in the sunlight by the window.
"America, my sweet girl. I'm having a hard time even starting this letter, because I feel like there's so much to tell you. Though I love all my children equally, you have a special place in my heart. Kenna and May both lean on your mother. Coda is so independent that Jared is drawn to him, but you have always come to me. When you scraped your knees or were picked on by the upper kids, My arms were always the ones you wanted. It means the world to me to know that at least for one of my children, I was their rock. But even if you didn't love me the way that you do, without any sort of worry or restraint, I'd still be incredibly proud of you. You're coming into your own as a musician, and the sounds of you playing your violin or just singing around the house are the loveliest, most soothing sounds in all the world. I wish I could give you a better stage, America. You deserve so much more than standing in the shadows at stuffy parties. I keep hoping you'll be one of the lucky ones, the breakouts. I think Coda has a chance at it, too. He's gifted at what he does. But I feel like Coda would fight for it, and I'm not sure you have that instinct in you. You were never a cutthroat kind of girl, the way some of the other lowers can be. And that's part of why I love you, too. You're good, America. You'd be surprised at how rare that is in this world. I'm not saying you're perfect. Having dealt with some of your temper tantrums, I know that's far from the truth. But you're kind, and you ache for things to be fair. You're good, and I suspect you see things in this world that no one else sees, not even me. And I wish I could tell you how much I see. As I've been writing these letters to your brothers and sisters, I felt the need to pass on wisdom. I see in them, even in little Jared, the things in their personalities that could make every year more difficult if they don't make the effort to fight against the hardness in life. I don't quite feel that urge with you. I sense that you won't let the world push you into a life you don't want. Maybe I'm wrong, so let me at least say this. Fight, America. You might not want to fight for the things that most others would fight for, like money or notoriety, but fight all the same. Whatever it is that you want, America, go after it with all that you have in you. If you can do that, if you can keep from letting fear make you settle for second best, then I can't ask for anything more from you as a parent. Live your life. Be as happy as you can be. Let go of the things that don't matter. And fight. I love you, kitten. So much that I can't find the words to say it. I could paint it, maybe, but I can't fit a canvas in this envelope. Even then, it would never do you justice. I love you beyond paint, beyond melodies, beyond words. And I hope you will always feel that, even when I'm not around to tell you so. Love, Dad. I wasn't sure at what point I had started crying, but it was hard to make out the last of the letter. I wished so badly I'd had a chance to tell him I loved him the same way. And for a minute there, I could feel it, that warmth of absolute acceptance. I looked up and saw that Kenna was crying too, still trying to make her way through the letter. Coda looked confused as he flipped past the pages, seeming to go over them again. Turning away, I pulled out the little note, hoping it wasn't nearly as touching as his letter. I wasn't sure I could take any more of that today. America, I'm sorry. When we visited, I went to your room and found Ilya's diary. You didn't tell me it was there, I just figured it out. If there is any trouble from this, the blame is mine. And I'm sure there will be repercussions because of who I am and because of who I told. I hate to betray you that way, but trust that I did it hoping that your future and everyone else's could be better. Look unto the North Star, your everlasting guide. Let truth, honor, all that's right, be always by your side. Love you. Shalom. I stood there for several minutes trying to riddle this out. Repercussions? Who he was and who he had told? And what was with that poem? Slowly, August's words came back to me, that my display on the report wasn't how they knew the diaries existed, and how they knew more of what was inside than I'd exposed. Who I am, who I told, look unto the North Star. I stared at Dad's signature, and remembered the way he signed the letters he'd sent me at the palace. I always thought the way he wrote his O's looked funny. They were 8-point stars. North Stars. The scribble over the I in my name. Did he want it to mean something to me, too? Did it already mean something because we'd talked to August and Georgia? August and Georgia. His compass, 8 points. The designs on her jacket weren't flowers at all.
both different but absolutely stars. The boy Chris got at the convicting. That wasn't a cross on his neck. This was how they identified their own. My father was a northern rebel. I felt as if I'd seen the star in other places, maybe walking in the market or even in the palace. Had this been staring me in the face for years? Stricken, I looked up. Aspen was waiting there, his eyes holding questions he couldn't ask aloud. My dad was a rebel. A half-destroyed history book hidden in his room, friends at his funeral I knew nothing about, a daughter named America. If I'd paid attention at all, I would have seen it years ago.
"That's it?" Coda asked, sounding offended. "What the hell am I supposed to do with that?"
I turned away from Aspen, focusing on Coda.
"What's wrong?" Mom asked, coming back into the room with some tea.
"Dad's letter. He left me this house. What am I supposed to do with this dump?"
He stood up, gripping the pages in his hand.
"Coda, Dad wrote that before you moved out," Kenna explained, still emotional. "He was trying to provide for you."
"Well, he failed then, didn't he? When have we ever not been hungry? This house sure as hell wouldn't have changed things. I did that for myself."
Coda threw the papers across the room, and they flitted to the floor haphazardly. Running his fingers through his hair, he huffed out a sigh.
"Do we have any liquor in this place? Aspen, go get me a drink,"
he demanded, not even looking in Aspen's direction. I turned and saw Aspen's face as a thousand emotions flickered across it. Irritation, sympathy, pride, acceptance. He started toward the kitchen.
"Stop," I commanded.
Aspen paused. Coda looked up, frustrated.
"That's what he does, America."
"No, he doesn't," I spat. "You might have forgotten, but Aspen's a two now. It would do you better to get him something to drink. Not just for his status, but for everything he's been doing for all of us."
A sly smirk fell across Coda's face.
"Huh, does Maxon know? Does he know this is still going on?"
he asked, waving a lazy finger between the two of us. My heart stopped beating.
"What would he do, you think? The caning thing's been done, and lots of people say that girl didn't get it bad enough for what she did."
Coda placed his satisfied hands on his hips, staring us down. I couldn't speak. Aspen didn't either, and I wondered if our silence was helping us or condemning us. Finally, Mom broke the silence.
"Is it true?"
I needed to think. I needed to find the right way to explain this, or a way to fight it, because really it wasn't true. Not anymore.
"Aspen, go check on Lucy," I said.
He started walking until Coda protested.
"No, he stays."
I lost it.
"I say he goes. Now sit."
The tone in my voice, unlike anything I had ever heard before, startled everyone. Mom plopped down immediately, shocked. Aspen made his way down the hall, and Coda slowly, begrudgingly sat as well. I tried to focus.
"Yes, before the selection, I was dating Aspen. We were planning on telling everyone once we saved up the money to get married. Before I left, we broke it off, and then I met Maxon. I care about Maxon, and even though Aspen is with me a lot, nothing is happening there."
"Anymore," I amended in my head. Then I turned to Coda.
"If you think, even for a second, you can twist my past into something and try to blackmail me with it, think again. You once asked if I told Maxon about you, and I did. He knows exactly what a spineless, ungrateful jackass you are."
Coda pressed his lips together, ready to boil over. I spoke quickly.
"And you should know that he adores me," I said grandly. "If you think he'd take your word over mine, you might be surprised by how quickly my suggestion of putting a cane to your hands would happen if I chose to make it so. You want to test me?"
He clenched his fists, clearly debating. If I was right and his hands got injured, that would be the end of his career.
"Good," I said. "And if I hear you say another unkind word about Dad, I might do it anyway. You were damn lucky to have a father who loved you so much. He left you the house, and he could have taken it away after you left, but he didn't.
He still had hope for you, which is more than I can say.
I stormed off, heading into my room and slamming the door. I'd forgotten that Jared, May, Lucy, and Aspen would be waiting for me there.
You were dating Aspen? May asked.
I gasped. You were a little loud, Aspen said. I looked to Lucy. There were tears in her eyes. I didn't want to make her keep another secret, and clearly it pained her to think about it. She was so honest and loyal. How could I ask her to choose between me and the family she was sworn to serve?
I'll tell Maxon when we get back, I said to Aspen. I thought I was protecting you. I thought I was protecting myself. But all I've been doing is lying.
And if Coda knows, then maybe other people do.
I want to be the one to tell him.
Chapter 26. I spent the rest of the day hiding in my room. I didn't want to see Coda's accusing face or deal with Mom's questions. The worst was Lucy. She looked so sad to find out that I'd kept this secret from her. I didn't even want her serving me, and it seemed she was mostly fine with helping Mom however she could or playing with May. I had too much to think about to have her around anyway. I kept rehearsing my speech to Maxon. I was trying to figure out the best way to confess this news. Should I leave out anything Aspen and I had done at the palace? If I did and he asked about it, would that be worse than me admitting to it in the first place? And then I would get distracted thinking about Dad, wondering just what he'd said and done over the years. Were all those people I didn't know at his funeral really other rebels? Could there possibly be that many? Should I tell Maxon about that? Would he want me if he knew my family had rebel ties? It seemed as if some of the other elite were there because of who they were linked to. What if my link undid me? It seemed unlikely now that we were so close to August, but still. I wondered what Maxon was doing now. Working, maybe, or finding a way to avoid it. I wasn't there for him to take walks with or sit with. I wondered if Chris was taking my place. I covered my eyes, trying to think. How was I supposed to get through all this? There was a knock on my door. I didn't know if what was coming would make things better or worse, but I told the visitor to come in anyway. Kenna walked in, and for the first time since I'd come home, Astra was nowhere in sight. You okay? I shook my head, and the tears came. She walked in and sat beside me on the bed, wrapping an arm around me. I miss Dad. His letter was so... I know, she said. He hardly even spoke when he was here, but he left us with all these words. Part of me is glad. I don't know if I would remember it all if he hadn't written it down. Yeah. In that, I had the answer to a question I was afraid to ask. No one else knew Dad had been a rebel. So, you and Aspen? It's over, I swear. I believe you. When you're on TV, you should see the way you look at Maxon. Even that other girl, Celeste? She rolled her eyes. I smiled to myself. She tries to look like she's in love with him, but you can see it's not real. Or at least not as real as she wishes it was. I snorted. You have no idea how right you are on that one. I was wondering how long that had been happening. With Aspen, I mean. 2 years. It started after you got married and Coda moved out. We'd been meeting in the treehouse about once a week. We were saving up to get married. You were in love then? Shouldn't I have been able to answer right away? Shouldn't I have been able to tell her that I knew without a doubt that I'd loved Aspen? But now it didn't really seem that way. Maybe it was, but time and distance made it look different. I think so, but it doesn't feel like things with Maxon, she guessed. I shook my head. It just seems so strange now. For the longest time, Aspen was the only person I could imagine being with. I was ready to be a six. And now? And now you're 5 minutes away from being the next princess? Her deadpan voice made the whole thing funny, and I laughed with her at the drastic change in my life. Thanks for that. That's what sisters are for. I looked into her eyes and sensed that this hurt her somehow. Sorry I didn't tell you sooner. You're telling me now? It wasn't because I didn't trust you. It was part of what made it special, I think. Keeping him a secret. Saying it out loud, I realized that it was true. Yes, I had feelings for him, but there were other things that surrounded us that made having Aspen that much sweeter. The secrecy, the rush of being touched, the thought of having something worth working toward. I understand, America, I really do. I just hope you never felt like you had to keep it a secret, because I'm here for you. I exhaled, and so many of my worries seemed to leave with that breath, at least for a moment. I propped my head on Kenneth's shoulder, and it was nice to be able to think. So is anything going on between you and Aspen anymore? How does he feel about you? I sighed, sitting up. He keeps trying to tell me something. Something about how he's always loved me. And I know I should tell him that it doesn't matter and that I love Maxon, but... But? What if Maxon picks someone else? I can't walk away from this with nothing. At least if Aspen still thinks there's a chance, maybe we could try again when everything's over. She stared at me. You're using Aspen as a safety net? I buried my head in my hands. I know, it's awful, isn't it? America, you're better than that. And if you've ever cared about him at all, you need to tell him the truth just as badly as you need to tell Maxon the truth. A knock came at the door. Come in. I blushed a little as Aspen walked in the doorway, a dejected Lucy close behind. You need to get dressed and packed, he said. Is something wrong? I stood up, suddenly tense. All I know is that Maxon wants you back at the palace immediately. I sighed, confused. I was supposed to have one more day. Kenna wrapped her arm around me again and gave me a tiny squeeze before heading back to the living room. Aspen left, and Lucy merely grabbed her uniform and went to the bathroom to change, closing the door behind her. Alone again, I thought over everything. Kenna was right. I already knew how I felt about Maxon, and it was time to do what Dad had told me to do, what I'd meant to be doing this whole time. I was going to fight. And because it felt like the bigger task, I would talk to Maxon first. Once that was settled, no matter the outcome, then I would figure out what to say to Aspen. It had happened so slowly that it took me a while to realize how much we'd changed. But I'd known for weeks and had still kept my feelings to myself. I had to do the right thing and tell him so. I had to let go of Aspen. I reached into my suitcase, hunting for the bundle at the bottom. Once I found the ball of fabric, I unrolled it, taking out my jar. The penny wasn't so lonely in there now with the bracelet, but that didn't matter. I took the jar and placed it on my windowsill, leaving it where it should have stayed a long time ago. I spent the majority of the plane ride going over my confession to Maxon. I was dreading this, but we could only move forward if he knew the truth. I looked up from my comfy seat near the rear of the plane. Aspen and Lucy were sitting toward the front on opposite sides of the aisle, deep in conversation. Lucy looked upset still, and she seemed to be giving Aspen some sort of instructions. He was quiet as he took in her words, nodding at her suggestions. She retreated into her seat, and Aspen stood. I ducked back, hoping he didn't notice me spying. I tried to look very interested in my book until he approached.
The pilot says another half hour or so, he informed me.
All right. Good. He hesitated.
I'm sorry about everything with Coda.
You don't have anything to be sorry for. He's just mean.
No, I do. Years ago he teased me for having a crush on you and I brushed it off, but I think he saw through it. He must have been paying attention since then. I should have been more careful or something. I should have...
Aspen?
Yes.
It'll be fine. I'm going to tell Maxon the truth, and I'm going to take responsibility for this. You've got people at home depending on you. If something happens to you...
Mare, you tried to keep me from this, and I was too stubborn to listen. It's my fault.
No, it's not.
He took a deep breath. Listen, I need to tell you something. I know it's going to be difficult, but you need to know. When I told you I'd always love you, I meant it. And I...
Stop, I pleaded. I knew I had to tell him the truth, but I could only deal with one confession at a time. I can't handle this right now. I just had my world turned upside down, and I'm about to do something I'm terrified to do. I need you to give me some room right now.
Aspen didn't look happy with this decision, but he let me make it all the same.
As you wish, my lady.
He walked away, and I felt even worse than I had before.
Chapter 27. Walking back into the palace felt impossibly right. A maid I'd never seen before was there to take my coat, and Aspen was next to a guard, explaining quietly that he'd give a full report on the trip in the morning. I started up the stairs, but another maid stopped me.
Don't you want to go to the reception, miss?
Excuse me? Was I supposed to have some fantastic homecoming or something?
In the women's room, my lady. I'm sure they're waiting for you.
That was less of an explanation than I was hoping for, but I climbed back down the stairs and headed around the corner to the women's room. Strolling down the familiar halls was more comforting than I could have imagined. Of course, I still missed my dad, but it was nice not to see things that made me think of him everywhere I turned. The only thing that would have made this homecoming better was Maxon walking here with me. I was toying with the possibility of sending for him when I heard the wild noise coming from the women's room. I was confused by the sound. By the volume, half of Ilya was waiting in there. Tentatively, I opened the door. The second Tiny, what was she doing here, caught a glimpse of my hair. She called out to the room, "She's here! America's back!" The room exploded with cheers, and I was so confused. Emeka, Ashley, Bariel, everyone was here. I hunted, but I knew it was pointless. Marley wouldn't be invited to this. I was rushed by Celeste, who embraced me tightly.
Ah, you bitch, I knew you'd make it.
What? I asked. She didn't get her words out fast enough. A split second later, Chris was hugging me and half screaming in my ear. The smell in her breath said she'd been drinking quite a bit, and the glass in her hand confirmed she wasn't planning on stopping.
It's us, she yelled. Maxon's announcing his engagement tomorrow. It's one of us.
Are you sure?
Elise and I got the boot last night, but he sent for all the girls to come back and celebrate, so we stayed, Celeste confirmed.
Elise isn't taking it well. You know how it is with her family. She thinks she failed.
What about you? I asked nervously. She shrugged and smiled.
Eh.
I laughed at that, and a moment later a drink was shoved in my hand.
To Chris and America, the last girls standing, someone yelled.
I was dizzy with the news. He'd decided to end it, to send everyone home, and he did it while I was away. Did that mean he missed me? Did that mean he realized he was fine without me?
Drink, Celeste insisted, tipping the glass back for me. I downed the champagne and came up coughing. Between the jet lag, the emotional stress of the last few days, and the sudden intake of alcohol, I was immediately giddy. I watched as girls danced on the couches, celebrating even though they had lost. Celeste was in a corner with Anna. It looked as if she was apologizing repeatedly for her actions. Elise crept in quietly and came to offer me a hug before retreating again. It was a blur of excitement, and I found myself happy, even though I wasn't totally certain of the outcome in front of me. I turned around, and Chris was suddenly there, embracing me.
Okay, she said. Let's promise that tomorrow, no matter what, we'll be happy for each other.
I think that's a good plan, I shouted over the din. I laughed and lowered my eyes. In that quick second, a serious realization flooded me. That flash of silver on her neck suddenly meant so much more than it had a few days ago. I sucked in a breath, and she looked at me with an expression that asked what was wrong. Even though it was rude and abrupt, I pulled her out of the room and down the hall.
Where are we going? She asked. America, what's wrong?
I dragged her around the corner and into the ladies' bathroom, double-checking to make sure we were alone before speaking.
You're a rebel, I accused.
What? She said, a little too rehearsed.
You're crazy.
But her hand fluttered to her neck, giving her away. I know what that star means, Chris, so don't lie to me, I said calmly. After a calculated pause, she sighed.
I haven't done anything illegal. I'm not mounting protests anywhere. I just support the cause.
Fine, I spat,
But how much of your part in the selection is you wanting Maxon, and how much is your group wanting one of their own on the throne?
She was quiet for a moment, choosing her words. Clenching her jaw, she walked over to the door and locked it.
If you must know, yes, I was presented to the king as an option. I'm sure you've guessed by now that the lottery was a joke.
I nodded.
The king was, and still is, unaware of how many northerners were promoted while the choice was being made. I was the only one of all the hopefuls to make it through, and at first I was completely dedicated to my cause. I didn't understand Maxon, and it didn't seem like he wanted me at all. But then I got to know him, and I was really sad about him not taking an interest in me. After Marley left and you lost your hold on him, I saw him in a totally new light. You might think that my motives for coming here were wrong, and maybe you're right, but my reasons for being here now are completely different. I love Maxon, and I'm still fighting for him, and we can do great things together. So if you're thinking about trying to blackmail me or sell me out, forget it. I'm not backing down. Do you understand me?
Chris had never spoken so forcefully, and I didn't know if the reason was her absolute faith in her words or the heavy amount of champagne. She looked so fierce at the moment, I wasn't sure what to say. I wanted to tell her that Maxon and I could do great things too, that we'd probably already done more than she could guess. But now wasn't the time to brag. Besides, she and I had a lot in common. I came here for my family. She came here for a family of sorts. That got us through the doorway and into Maxon's heart. What good would it do us to tear each other apart now? She took my silence as an agreement to behave, and she relaxed her stance.
Good. Now, if you'll excuse me, I'm going back to the party.
Giving me a cold stare, she swept out of the room, leaving me torn. Should I keep my mouth shut? Should I at least let someone know? Was this even a bad thing? I sighed and left the bathroom. I wasn't in the mood to celebrate anymore, so I took the back stairway up to my room. Even though I wanted to see Anne and Mary, I was glad no one was there. I flopped onto the bed and tried to think. So, Chris was a rebel. Nothing dangerous according to her, but I still wondered what that meant exactly. She must be who August and Georgia were talking about. What had ever made me think it was Elise? Had Chris helped them get into the palace? Had she pointed them in the direction of things they had been looking for? I had my secrets in the palace, but I'd never stopped to think about what the other girls could be hiding. I should have, though. Because what could I say now? If there was something real between Maxon and Chris, any attempt to expose her would look like a desperate last effort to win. And even if that worked, that wasn't how I wanted to get Maxon. I wanted him to know I loved him. A knock came at the door, and I considered not answering it. If it was Chris coming to explain more, or one of the girls trying to drag me downstairs, that wasn't anything I wanted to deal with. Eventually, I heaved myself upright and went to the door. Maxon stood there with a stuffed envelope and a small, gift-wrapped package. In the second it took us to register that we were in the same place again, it felt as if the whole space charged with a magical kind of electricity, making me acutely aware of just how much I missed him.
Hi,
he said. He seemed a little stunned, as if he couldn't think of anything more to say.
Hi.
We stared. Do you want to come in? I offered.
Yes, I do.
Something was off. He was different, nervous maybe. I stood aside, making room for him to enter. He looked around the space, as if it had changed somehow since the last time he saw it. He turned to gaze at me.
How are you feeling?
I realized he probably meant about my dad, and I reminded myself that the end of the selection wasn't the only shift in my world right now. Okay. It doesn't really feel like he's gone, especially now that I'm here. I feel like I could write him a letter and he'd still get it. He gave me a sympathetic smile.
How's your family?
I sighed. Mom is holding it together, and Kenna is a rock. It's mostly May and Jared I'm worried about. Coda couldn't have been any meaner about the whole thing. It's like he didn't love him at all, and I don't understand that, I confessed. You met my dad, he was so sweet.
He was,
Maxon agreed.
I'm glad I at least got to meet him. I can see bits of him in you, you know.
Really?
Absolutely.
He put his parcels in one hand, holding me with his free one. He walked me over to the bed, sitting next to me.
Your sense of humor, for one, and your tenacity. When he and I spoke during his visit, he grilled me. It was nerve-wracking, but kind of funny at the same time. You've never just let me off the hook, either. Of course, you have his eyes, and I think his nose, too. And I can see your optimism beaming out sometimes. He gave me that impression as well.
I soaked up the words, holding on to all the parts of me that were like him. And here I thought Maxon didn't know him.
All I'm saying is, it's okay to be sad about this, but you can be sure the best of him is still around, he concluded.
I threw my arms around him, and he held me with his free hand. Thank you.
I mean it.
I know you do. Thanks. I moved back beside him and decided to change the subject before I got too emotional. What's this all about? I asked, nodding toward his full hand.
Oh.
Maxon fumbled with his thoughts a moment.
These are for you. A late Christmas present.
He held up the envelope, thick with folded papers.
I can't believe I'm actually giving this to you, and you have to wait to look at them until I'm not here. But it's for you to keep.
Okay, I said questioningly, as he set the envelope on my bedside table.
This is a little less embarrassing, he added playfully, handing me the gift. Sorry the wrapping is so bad.
It's fine, I lied, trying not to laugh at the crooked seams and tearing at the paper on the back. Inside, the gift was a frame holding a picture of a house. Not just any house, but a beautiful one. It was a warm yellow color, with plush grass that I wanted to put my feet in just from looking at the print. The windows were tall and wide on both stories, with trees offering shade to a section of the lawn. One tree even had a swing hanging from it. I tried not to look at the house, but at the photo itself. I was sure that this little piece of art was something Maxon made himself, though I couldn't guess when he'd gotten out of the palace to find its subject. It's beautiful, I admitted. Did you take it yourself?
Oh, no.
He laughed, shaking his head.
The picture isn't the gift, the house is.
I tried to let that sink in. What?
I thought you'd want your family close by. It's a short drive away with plenty of room. Your sister and her little family would even be comfortable there, I think.
What? I stared at him, searching for clarification. Patient as ever, Maxon gave me the explanation he thought I already understood.
You told me to send everyone home. I did. I had to keep one other girl, those are the rules, but you said that if I could prove I loved you.
It's me?
Of course it's you.
I was speechless. I laughed in shock and started giving him kisses and giggling between each one. Maxon, so pleased with the affection, took every kiss and laughed along with me. We're getting married? I yelled, kissing him again.
Yes, we're getting married.
He chuckled and let me attack him in my excitement. I realized then that I was in his lap. I didn't remember getting there. I kissed him on, and somewhere in there the laughing stopped. After a while, the smiling dwindled. The kisses turned from playful to something much deeper. When I pulled away and looked into his eyes, they were intense, focused. Maxon held me close, and I could feel his heart racing against my chest. Guided by a deep hunger for him, I pushed his suit coat down his back, and he helped me as best he could while holding on to me. I let my shoes fall to the floor, thudding a little song on their way down. I felt Maxon's legs shift underneath me as he slipped his off as well. Without breaking our kiss, he lifted me, crawling deeper onto the bed, and laying me down gently somewhere near the middle. His lips traveled down my neck as I loosened his tie, throwing it somewhere near our shoes.
You're breaking a lot of rules, Miss Singer.
You're the prince. You can just pardon me. He chuckled darkly, his lips at my throat, my ear, my cheek. I untucked his shirt, fumbling with the buttons. He helped with the last few, sitting up to toss it aside. The last time I'd seen Maxon without his shirt on, I didn't get to really appreciate it because of the circumstance. But now...
I ran my fingers lightly down his stomach, admiring how strong he was. When my hand got to his belt, I gripped it and pulled him back down. He came willingly, dragging a hand up my leg, resting it comfortably on my thigh underneath the layers of my dress. I was going crazy, wanting so much more of him, aching to know if he'd let me have it. Without even thinking, I reached around and dug my fingers into his back. Immediately, he stopped kissing me, pulling back to look at me. "What?" I whispered, terrified to break this moment.
Does it repulse you?"
he asked nervously.
"What do you mean?"
"My back."
I ran a hand down his cheek, staring directly into his eyes, wanting to leave him with no doubt about how I felt.
"Maxon, some of those marks are on your back so they wouldn't be on mine, and I love you for them."
He stopped breathing for a second.
"What did you say?"
I smiled. "I love you."
"One more time, please.
I took his face in both of my hands. "Maxon Shreve, I love you. I love you."
"And I love you, America Singer. With all that I am, I love you."
He kissed me again, and I let my hands move to his back, and this time he didn't pause. He moved his hands beneath me, and I felt his fingers playing with the back of my dress.
"How many damn buttons does this thing have?" he complained.
"I know, it's..."
Maxon sat up, placing his hands along the bust line of my dress. With one firm pull, he ripped my dress down the front, exposing the slip underneath. There was a charged silence as Maxon took that in. Slowly, his eyes returned to mine. Without breaking that contact, I sat up, sliding the sleeves of my dress down my back. It took a little bit of work to get it all off, and by the end of it, Maxon and I were kneeling on my bed, my hardly covered chest pressed to his, kissing slowly. I wanted to stay up all night with him, to explore this new feeling we'd discovered. It felt as if everything else in the world was gone, until we heard a crash in the hall. Maxon stared at the door, seeming to expect it to burst open at any second. He was tense, more frightened than I'd ever seen him.
"It's not him," I whispered. "It's probably one of the girls stumbling to her room, or a maid cleaning something. It's okay."
He finally released a breath I didn't see he was holding and fell back onto the bed. He draped an arm over his eyes, frustrated or exhausted, or maybe both.
"I can't, America. Not like this."
"But it's okay, Maxon. We're safe here."
I lay down beside him, cuddling onto his free shoulder. He shook his head.
"I want to let all the walls down with you. You deserve that. And I can't now."
He looked over to me.
"I'm sorry."
"It's okay." But I couldn't hide my disappointment.
"Don't be sad. I want to take you on a proper honeymoon. Someplace warm and private. No duties, no cameras, no guards."
He wrapped his arms around me.
"It will be so much better that way. And I can really spoil you."
It didn't sound so bad to wait when he put it that way. But as always, I pushed back.
"You can't spoil me, Maxon. I don't want anything."
We were nose to nose by then.
"Oh, I know. I don't intend on giving you things."
"Well," he amended,
"I do intend on giving you things, but that's not what I mean. I'm going to love you more than any man has ever loved a woman, more than you ever dreamed you could be loved. I promise you that."
The kisses that followed were sweet and hopeful, like our first ones. I could feel it, the promise he'd just made, starting now. And I was afraid and excited by the possibility of being loved so much.
"Maxon?"
"Yes?"
"Would you stay with me tonight?" I asked.
Maxon raised an eyebrow and I giggled.
"I'll behave, I promise. Just, would you sleep here?"
He looked to the ceiling, debating. Finally, he caved.
"I will, but I'll need to leave early."
"Okay."
"Okay."
Maxon took off his pants and socks, neatly stacking his clothes so they wouldn't be too wrinkled in the morning. He crawled back into the bed, snuggling up with his stomach against my back. One of his arms he laced under my neck, and the other he gently wrapped around me. I loved my bed at the palace. The pillows were like clouds, and the mattress cradled me into it. I was never too warm or too cold under my covers, and the feeling of my nightgown against my skin was almost as if I was wearing air. But I'd never felt so settled as I did with Maxon's arms around me. He placed a gentle kiss behind my ear.
Sleep well, my America.
I love you, I said quietly. He held me a little tighter.
I love you.
I lay there, letting the happiness of the moment sink into me. It seemed only seconds later that Maxon's breathing was slow and steady. He was already asleep. Maxon never slept. I must have made him feel safer than I'd imagined. And after all my worries about how his father acted toward me, he made me feel safe, too. I sighed, promising myself that we'd talk about Aspen tomorrow. It would need to happen before the ceremony, and I felt sure I knew how to explain things in the best way. For now, I would enjoy this tiny bubble of peace and rest securely in the arms of the man I loved. Chapter 28. I woke to the feeling of Maxon sliding an arm around me. Somewhere in the night, I ended up with my head on his chest, and the slow sound of his heartbeat was echoing in my ear. Without a word, he kissed my hair and went to hold me closer. I couldn't believe this was happening. I was here with Maxon, together, waking up in my bed. This morning, he would be giving me a ring.
We could wake up like this every day,
he mumbled. I giggled. You're reading my mind. He sighed contentedly.
How are you feeling, my dear?
I feel like punching you for calling me my dear, mostly. I poked his bare stomach. Smiling, he crawled to sit over me.
Fine then, my darling, my pet, my love.
Any of those would work, so long as you've reserved it solely for me, I said, my hands mindlessly wandering his chest, his arms. What am I supposed to call you?
Your royal husbandness, it's required by law, I'm afraid.
His own hands glided over my skin, finding a delicate spot on my neck. Don't, I said, shying away. His responding smile was triumphant.
You're ticklish.
Despite my protests, he started running his fingers all over me, making me shriek at the playful touching. Nearly as quickly as I began squealing, I stopped. A guard rushed through the door, gun drawn. This time I screamed, pulling up the sheet to cover myself. I was so frightened that it took me a moment to realize the determined eyes of the guard belonged to Aspen. It felt as if my face caught on fire. I was so humiliated. Aspen looked stricken. He couldn't even put a sentence together as his eyes flashed back and forth between Maxon in his underwear and me draped in a sheet to cover mine. My shock was finally broken by a deep laugh. For as terrified as I was, Maxon was the picture of ease. In fact, he seemed pleased at being caught. His voice was a little smug as he spoke.
I assure you, Ledger, she's perfectly safe.
Aspen cleared his throat, unable to look either of us in the eye.
Of course, Your Majesty.
He bowed and left, closing the door behind him. I fell over, moaning into my pillow. I would never live that down. I should have told Aspen how I felt on the plane when I had the chance. Maxon came to hug me.
Don't be so embarrassed. It's not as if we were naked, and it's bound to happen in the future.
It's so humiliating, I wailed.
To be caught in bed with me?
The pain in his voice was clear. I sat up and faced him. No, it's not you. It's just, I don't know. This was supposed to be private. I ducked my head and played with a piece of the blanket. Tenderly, Maxon stroked my cheek.
I'm sorry.
I looked up at him, his voice too sincere to ignore.
I know it's going to be hard for you, but people will always be looking at our lives now. For the first few years, there will probably be a lot of interference. All the kings and queens have had only children. Some by choice, I'm sure, but after the difficulty my mother had, they'll want to make sure we can even have a family.
He stopped talking, his eyes having moved from my face to a spot on the bed. Hey, I said, cupping his cheek. I'm one of five, remember? I have really good genes in that department. It'll be all right. He gave me a weak smile.
I really hope so.
Partly because, yes, we're duty-bound to produce heirs, but also, I want everything with you, America. I want the holidays and the birthdays, the busy seasons and lazy weekends. I want peanut butter fingerprints on my desk. I want inside jokes and fights and everything. I want a life with you.
Suddenly, the last few minutes were erased from my mind. The growing warmth in my chest was pushing everything else away.
I want that too, I assured him.
He smiled.
How about we make it official in a few hours?
I shrugged. I guess I don't have any other plans today.
Maxon tackled me on the bed, covering me with kisses. I would have let him kiss me like that for hours, but Aspen seeing us together was enough. There was no way I'd be able to stop my maids from gushing if they saw this.
He got dressed and I pulled on my robe. It should have felt funny, maybe, this little moment in the afterword. All I could think about, though, as I watched Maxon cover his scars with his shirt, was how incredible this was. This thing I'd never wanted to happen was making me so happy.
Maxon gave me one last kiss before opening the door and heading on his way. It was harder to part with him than I thought it would be. I told myself it was only for a few hours and that the wait would be so worth it. Before I closed the door, I heard Maxon whisper,
"The lady would appreciate your discretion, officer."
There was no response, but I could imagine Aspen's solemn nod. I stood behind the closed door, debating what to say, wondering if I should even say anything. Minutes passed, but I knew I had to face Aspen. I couldn't move forward with everything that was going to happen today without talking to him first. I drew in a breath and nervously opened the door. He tilted his head toward the hallway, listening for voices. Finally, Aspen turned his accusing eyes my way, and the weight of his stare broke me.
"I'm so sorry," I breathed.
He shook his head.
"It's not as if I didn't know it was coming. It was just a shock."
"I should have told you," I said, stepping into the hall.
"It doesn't matter. I just can't believe you slept with him."
I put my hands on his chest. "I didn't, Aspen, I swear."
And then, at the last possible moment, everything was ruined. Maxon stepped around the corner, holding Chris by the hand. His eyes locked onto me, body pressed into Aspen with the intensity of my defense. I backed away, but not quickly enough. Aspen turned to face Maxon, prepared to give an excuse, but still too stunned to speak. Chris's mouth dropped open, and she quickly covered it with a hand. Looking into Maxon's shocked eyes, I shook my head, trying to explain without words that this was all a misunderstanding. It was only a second before Maxon regained his cool demeanor.
"I found Chris in the hall, and was coming to explain my choice to you both before the cameras showed up, but it seems we have other things to discuss."
I looked at Chris, and was at least consoled by the fact that there was no triumph in her eyes. On the contrary, she looked sad for me.
"Chris, would you please return to your room, quietly?"
Maxon instructed. She curtsied and disappeared down the hall, eager to get away from the situation. Maxon took a deep breath before looking at us again.
"I knew it," he said. "I told myself I was crazy, because surely you would have told me if I was right. You were supposed to be honest with me."
He rolled his eyes.
"I cannot believe I didn't trust myself. From that first meeting, I knew it, the way you looked at him.